Oh, sure. The Dhammapada, The Way of the Buddha, Volume 7, Discourse Number 10.
The first question. Bhagwan, will you please talk about the desire to help people, its differences and similarities to other forms of desire? With Ekagro, desire is desire. There are no differences at all. Whether you want to help people or you want to harm people, the nature of desire remains the same. A Buddha does not desire to help people. He helps people, but there is no desire in it. It is spontaneous. It is just the fragrance of a flower that has bloomed. The flower is not desiring that the fragrance should be released, should reach to the winds, to people. Whether it reaches or not is not the concern of the flower at all. That is accidental if it reaches. If it does not reach, that is too accidental. The flower is spontaneously releasing its fragrance. The sun rises, there is no desire to wake up people, no desire to open the flowers, no desire to help the birds to sing. It all happens on its own accord. A Buddha helps not because he desires to help. Compassion is his nature. Every meditator becomes compassionate, but not a servant of the people. The servant of the people are mischievous people. The world has suffered too much from these servants. Because it is desire masquerading as compassion. And desire can never be compassionate. Desire is always exploitation. Now they will exploit in the name of compassion. They will exploit in beautiful names. They will talk about service to humanity. And they will talk about brotherhood. And they will talk about religion and God and truth. And all their beautiful talk will bring only more and more wars, more and more bloodshed, more and more people will be crucified, burned alive. That's what has been happening up to now. And if you don't bring a new understanding to the world, it is going to continue the same way. So two things to be remembered. One, to desire is the same whether you desire to help or to harm. It is not a question of the object of desire. The question is of the nature of desire. The nature of desire leads you into the future. It brings the tomorrow in. And with the tomorrow come all the tensions, all the anxieties. whether I am going to make it or not, whether I am going to succeed or not. The fear of failure and the ambition to succeed will be there. Whether you desire money, or you desire victory in the world, or you desire to be compassionate to people, or you desire to bring salvation to people, it is all the same game, only names change. This is very fundamental to understand. A man asked Buddha, I would like to help people. Instruct me. Buddha looked at him and became very sad. The man was puzzled, confused. He said, why you have become sad? Have I said anything wrong? Buddha said, how can you help people? You have not even helped yourself. You will only harm them in the name of help. First, bring the light within your being. Let the flame be enkindled into your consciousness. And then you will never ask this question. Then naturally, your very presence and whatsoever you do will be of great help. Ekagro, desire is desire. There is neither material desire nor spiritual desire. It is ego trip. Helping people, and you become holier than the others, and you become wise than the others, and you know and they don't know. You want to help because you have arrived, and they are all ignorant people stumbling in darkness, and you want to become a light for them. You want to become a master and you want to reduce them into disciples. If this desire is there, then this desire is not going to help them. It is not going to help you either. It will do a double harm. It is a double-edged sword. It will cut others, it will cut you too. It is destructive. It can't be creative. Then there is another kind of help which is not out of desire, which is not out of any ego project. That kind of help, that kind of compassion happens only at the ultimate peak of meditation, never before it. When the spring has come to your consciousness, when you are all flowers inside, fragrance starts reaching to others. You need not desire. You can't help, in fact. Even if you want to prevent it, you can't prevent it. It is inevitable. It will reach to others. It will become a light in their life. It will become a herald of new beginnings. But not because you are desiring it, but because you are transformed. The second question, Bhagwan, I want to be a sannyasin. But I don't want to wear orange or mala. And I don't want to change my name to? Can I be a sannyasini still? Rupesh, then why bother? Then believe that you are a sannyasin. Who can prevent you from believing? You can believe anything. It happened in Baghdad. The Khalif of Baghdad was very angry at a man who was brought to his court. The man was declaring that he is the new prophet, the new Messiah. God has sent him after Muhammad, because now 14 centuries have passed and the message of Muhammad has become old. A new dispensation is needed. Hence he has sent to me. He has sent me to deliver the new message. Mohammedans can't tolerate such things. The Khalif said, you come to your senses back, otherwise you will be in trouble. And he ordered that this man should be whipped, put into jail. No food, no water for 7 days, and beat him as much as possible. Don't allow him any sleep, any rest. For 7 days the man was tortured. Then the Khalif came to the jail. The man was chained with a pillar. He was looking very pale, tired, the whole body swollen, blood marks. He had not been given even water, no food, no sleep, and continuous beating. The Khalif asked him, what do you think now? He said, what do I think now? I am more convinced than ever that I am the Messiah. Because when I was coming, God said to me, listen, my messengers have always been treated very badly. Jesus was crucified. Muhammad was continuously hunted by murderers. Socrates was poisoned. Mansur was killed. So many tortures will happen to you. So I am grateful, the man said to the Khalif, that you have proved to my heart's content that I am the prophet. At that moment, another man who was chained with another pillar started laughing loudly. The Khalif asked, why you are laughing? The man said, this man is simply lying, because I am God myself and I have not sent this man at all. You can believe anything. Nobody can disturb your belief. Even disturbances can become proofs that you are right. But why bother? If you can't change your clothes even, will you be able to change your soul? If you can't change your name even, which is just a fiction, all names are fictitious. You come in the world without names, and then names are given to you. If you are so identified, Rupesh, with your name, how you are going to change your inner worlds, your identity with the body, with the mind. If you cannot drop the identity with a fictitious name, the body is too real, the mind is too real, it will be impossible for you to change that. A poor man came home and asked his wife, why don't we ever have blinches? Well, replied the wife, blinches are expensive. They require cheese. Could not you leave out the cheese? Maybe, she said, but still they require eggs. So leave out the eggs. Yes, she said, but they require butter and cinnamon and sugar. So leave them out, he said. Sometime later, she served him some flat cakes made practically from flour and water. Taking a taste, he said, I don't see what rich people like about blintzes. The third question. Bhagwan, I wanted to ask you a question the other day, but without my asking, you answered it. How do you manage such miracles? Suryo, if you are looking for miracles, you will find them in plenty. But miracles don't happen. The universal law remains always the same. There are no exceptions for it. But there is a stupid desire in almost everybody for miracles. We have not yet grown the days of magic. Only in the books of history they say that the days of magic are over. Out of magic was born religion. Out of religion was born philosophy. Out of philosophy was born science. But these are only words. In fact, there are millions of people who live in the world of magic still, who are childish in their approach towards reality. So they will jump upon anything. It must have been just a coincidence. Now there are 3,000 people here, and everybody has questions. 3,000 people must be having at least 30,000 questions. And I go on speaking year in and year out. Just leave a little space for coincidences. An old farmer had 3 daughters. When the oldest girl married, she moved to Twin Cities, Minnesota, and soon gave birth to a beautiful set of twin boys. Her sister married shortly thereafter, and she and her husband took up residence in Three Rivers, Ontario. Pretty soon, she gave birth to triplets. The youngest sister got herself engaged, but after almost a year she still refused to set the date for the wedding. Her father grew concerned and finally demanded that she stop procrastinating and set the date. If you love that boy, you will marry him this spring, or you won't marry him at all. But Pa, she wailed, I really do love Fred, but he keeps talking about moving to the 1,000 islands. Suryo, it was just a coincidence that you had the question and I talked about it. I was not aware of your question. I was not even aware that you are here. It is so difficult to remember sannyasins now. One 100,000 sannyasins, if I try to remember them, I will go crazy. I somehow manage. Mukta goes on, prompting me by the side every evening, who is coming? And still then, sometimes, I make a mess out of it. She says, he has come, and I ask him, when you are leaving? Or somebody is leaving, and I ask him, when you have come? So what miracle? The fourth question. Bhagwan, I have been praying for years, but none of my prayers has been answered. What is wrong with me and with my prayers? Govind, prayer simply means gratitude, thankfulness. It is not a demand, it is not a desire. And if you desire anything, then it is not prayer. Then don't call it a prayer. And that's what you must have been doing, desiring something, asking God, do this, do that for me. And because he is not doing, you are becoming frustrated. And rather than thinking that something is fundamentally wrong in the very idea of prayer that you are carrying with you, you may be even suspecting whether God exists or not. Prayer is not a demand on God. It is not a desire for something. If it is, then it will never reach to him. Desires are heavy things. They gravitate towards the earth. They can't fly into the sky. When you have a pure gratitude, when you are not asking anything, but simply feeling thankful for all that he has already done for you, and he has done more than you are worthy for. He has done more than you deserve. Just look what he has done to you. He has given you life and love and joy. He has given you tremendous sensitivity for beauty. He has given you awareness. He has given you the possibility of becoming a Buddha. What more do you want? Feel thankful and then prayers are with wings. They can fly. They reach to the ultimate. Then the earth cannot pull them downwards. Then they start rising, soaring upwards. They levitate. With a desire, the prayer gravitates downwards. It cannot levitate. But millions of people go on praying with this wrong attitude. They pray only when they need something. The Texan was on his knees in church giving thanks for all his blessings. Of course he added, "I am grateful for my 6 houses, although I could use 2 or 3 more. Now I am grateful for my Rolls and 6 Cadillacs, but I could use a couple of more yachts to add to my collection. And I know I should be grateful for the banks I own, but could you see your way clear in giving me 5 more to make it an even dozen?" A little man kneeled next to him and talked up to God, "I need bread and a job. I would be so grateful." The Texan whipped out a $100 bill and handed it to the man. "Will you please stop bothering God with that small stuff?" But whether the stuff is small or big, whether you are asking for bread or for banks, it is same, exactly the same. Don't ask for anything. Thank Him for all that He has already done. Bow down. Words are not needed in thankfulness. Just bow down in deep gratitude, in silence. A real prayer is nonverbal. Words are inadequate. They are made for other things, not for prayer. Yes, once in a while you may find tears rolling down your eyes, and they are far more significant than all the words you can use. Yes, once in a while you would like to dance like a bowl mystic for no reason at all, for the sheer joy of being. That dance will be prayer. Yes, once in a while you may like to play on the flute. And believe me, God loves music. He is tired of your words. Sing, dance, cry, or just be silent. And you will be surprised. Great light starts showering on you. You are bathed into bliss, into benediction. The 5th question. Bhagwan, having the adventure of looking through ancient scriptures of yours, I have noticed that for at least 10 years you have kept on repeating this legend: there are 4 times more female disciples than male disciples. The same with Buddha, the same with me too. About Buddha I don't know, I was not there. But about you, after documented and meticulous research, I am happy to inform you that you have 52,387 female disciples and 53,946 male disciples. As the old Bab Dalan used to say, the times are changing, fortunately. Would you please say something about this? A disciple does not live on legend only. Sarjano, you will have to do a little more meticulous research. Just look into those 53,946 male disciples. How many of them are really male? And then you will understand that my legend is still exactly true. It can't be otherwise. Buddhas don't lie. If facts don't fit with the legend, facts have to be changed. To be male or to be female is more a question of psychology than of physiology. One may be a male physiologically and may not be a male psychologically, and vice versa. There are aggressive women, and unfortunately they are growing in the world. Very aggressive women. The whole women live movement is rooted in these aggressive women's minds. When a woman is aggressive, she is not womanly. Joan of Arc is not a woman. And Jesus Christ is a woman. Joan of Arc, psychologically, is a man. Basically, her approach is that of aggression. Jesus Christ is not aggressive at all. He says, if somebody hits you on one cheek, turn the other. Give him the other cheek too. That is psychological non-aggressiveness. Jesus says, resist not evil. Even evil has not to be resisted. Non-resistance is the essence of feminine grace. Remember that if a man is totally receptive, physically he remains a man, but his interiority becomes more a womb. And only such men whose interiority becomes feminine are capable of receiving God. To be receptive, totally receptive, you will need to learn how to be a woman. Each seeker of truth has to learn to be a woman. Science is male, religion is female. Science is an effort to conquer nature. Religion is a let go, dissolving oneself into nature. The woman knows how to melt, how to become one. And each seeker of truth has to know how to dissolve into nature, how to become one with nature, how to go with the flow, without resisting, without fighting. And then you will see the proportion will always be the same. Here also, you will see that change happening. Many women have reported to me, complained, that what is happening here to men? They are becoming more and more feminine. That is true. That is bound to happen. As you become more and more meditative, your energies become non-aggressive. Your violence disappears. Love arises. You are no more interested in dominating. Instead, you become more and more intrigued with the art of surrendering. That's what makes a feminine psychology. To understand feminine psychology is to understand religious psychology. The effort has not been yet made. And whatsoever exists in the name of psychology is male psychology. That's why they go on studying rats and through rats they go on concluding about men. If you want to study the feminine psychology, then the best examples will be the mystics. Purest examples will be the mystics. Then you will have to learn about Basho, Rinchai, Buddha, Jesus, Lao Tzu. You will have to learn about these people, because only through their understanding you will be able to understand the peak, the highest crescendo of feminine expression. Because the woman has been dominated for centuries, religion has disappeared from the earth. If religion comes back, the woman will again gain respect. And because the woman has been dominated and tortured and reduced into a non-entity, she has become ugly. Whenever your nature is not allowed to go according to its inner needs, it turns sour, it becomes poisoned, it becomes crippled, paralyzed, it becomes perverted. The woman that you find in the world is not a true woman either. Because she has been corrupted for centuries. And when the woman is corrupted, man cannot remain natural either. Because after all, the woman gives birth to the man. If she is not natural, her children will not be natural. If she is not natural, she is going to mother the child, male or female. Those children will be naturally affected by the mother. Woman certainly needs a great liberation. But what is happening in the name of liberation is stupid. It is imitation, it is not liberation. Here there are many women who have been in the liberation movement. And when they for the first time come here, they are very aggressive. And I can understand their aggression. Centuries and centuries of domination has made them violent. It is a simple revenge. They have become insane. And nobody is responsible except man. But slowly, slowly, they soften. They become graceful. Their aggressiveness disappears. They become for the first time feminine. The real liberation will make the woman authentically woman, not an imitation of man. Right now, that's what is happening. Women are trying to be just like men. If they smoke cigarettes, then the woman has to smoke cigarettes. If they wear pants, then the woman has to wear pants. If they do a certain thing, the woman has to do that. She is just becoming a second-rate man. This is not liberation. This is a far deeper slavery. Far deeper, because the first slavery was imposed by man. This second slavery is deeper because it is created by women herself. And when somebody else imposes a slavery on you, you can rebel against it. But if you yourself impose a slavery upon yourself in the name of liberation, there is no possibility of rebellion ever. I would like the woman to become really woman, because much depends on her. She is far more important than man, because she carries in her womb both the woman and the man. And she mothers both the boy and the girl. She nurses both. If she is poisoned, then her milk is poisoned. Then her ways of bringing up children are poisoned. If the woman is not free to be really a woman, man will never be free to be really a man either. The freedom of woman is a must for the freedom of man. It is more fundamental than man's freedom. And if the woman is a slave, as she has been for centuries, she will make a slave of man too, in very subtle ways. Her ways are subtle. She will not fight with you directly. Her fight will be indirect. It will be feminine. she will cry and weep. She will not hit you. She will hit herself. And through hitting herself, through crying and weeping, through using these Gandhian methods, she will dominate you. Even the strongest man becomes henpecked. A very thin, weak woman can dominate a very strong man by simply using Gandhian methods. Gandhi is not the inventor of those methods. They have been used for centuries by women. He simply rediscovered them and used them politically. The woman has been using them for centuries, but only in a family context. The woman needs total freedom so that she can give freedom to men too. This is one of the fundamentals to be remembered. If you make somebody a slave, you will be reduced to a slavery. Ultimately, finally, you can't remain free. If you want to remain free, give freedom to others. That's the only way to be free. The sixth question, Bhagwan, cannot one ever find a perfect partner in marriage? Sagro, perfect people don't exist. And perfect people, if they existed, would have been very boring. It is imperfection that keeps life interesting. Just think of a perfect husband, a perfect wife. They will be utterly bored. Bertrand Russell is reported to have said that I don't want to go to heaven. For the simple reason, because there will be sages and sages, all perfect. Heaven is bound to be very boring. Just think of all perfect people. What life can there be? Bertrand Russell is right. In hell there is much more life than in heaven. Heaven will be certainly dull and dead. Perfection is death. Perfection is not found in the world. The world lives through imperfection, because in imperfection there is growth, evolution. Perfection means you have come to the dead end. Now there is no way to go further ahead. You are stuck. You ask me, cannot one ever find a perfect partner in marriage? Very difficult, almost impossible. I have heard about a man who searched his whole life for a perfect woman. Initially, he had to die a bachelor. When he was dying, somebody asked him, "Your whole life you were searching for a perfect wife. Could not you find a single woman who was perfect?" He said, "Who said that I didn't find? Many times I came across a perfect woman. Then the questioner asked, then what happened? Why didn't you got married? He said, but she was also looking for a perfect husband. In the first place, to find one person is very difficult who is perfect. And you are trying to find two persons. Impossible. It has not happened up to now. It can't happen. And what will make a perfect marriage? If the woman is truly a woman and the man is truly a man, there is bound to be some tension, and that tension is beautiful. In fact, that's what brings beauty to marriage. A little conflict is natural. Without that conflict, there will be no salt. Your food will be without salt. It will not taste good. There will be no spice in your life. If the woman is really a woman, a man a really man, then they will be polar opposites. And that is their attraction. Yes, once in a while they will come close, and that closeness will bring great joy, and then they will fall away again. And this will be a constant process of coming together and going away again. Each time they go away, they will fight, because that's how one can go away from each other. Fighting is nothing but a device. If you understand things, fighting is a device to separate. And each separation is beautiful because it again gives you an opportunity for a mini honeymoon. Then you can meet again. Fighting and then persuading each other. Fighting and then making things again okay. It's beautiful. If there is no fight, those two persons will not be real persons. It was the night before the wedding. Honey, the young man said, I have a confession to make. If you change your mind about marrying me, it is all right. But you have got to know I am a sadist. Ah, baby, cried the girl, am I glad you told me? I have been keeping it from you. I am a masochist. Now this is a perfect marriage. Marriage between a sadist and a masochist. You can't improve upon it. So the two got married and went away on their honeymoon. That evening at the hotel, the eager bride threw off her clothes, fell on the bed, in a throaty voice said, beat me, beat me. The groom stood over her, crossed his arms and replied, hope. He is a real sadist. Because if he beats, he is not torturing you. He is simply giving you joy. You wanted to be beaten and he beats. He says hope. And just stands there with crossed hands. So even this perfect marriage failed. I have never heard about any perfect marriage. They say perfect marriages are made in heaven. Nobody comes back from there. So maybe it is true. But what kind of marriages will be those perfect marriages? There will be no tension. There will be no individuality in the man or in the woman. They will never collide. They will never fight. They will be too sweet to each other. And too much sweetness brings diabetes. The seventh question, Bhagwan, is the reason for talking so much in favor of the women here because you may also be a little afraid of them too? Anand Tosin, it is true. Even Buddha was afraid. So this is nothing new. For 10 years continuously, he denied women. He will not accept them as his disciples. He will not initiate them for 10 years continuously. Thousands of women wanted to be initiated as his sannyasins, and he will say no. He was very adamant about it. Only finally he had to relax for a certain reason. Out of courtesy, when he was born, his mother died immediately after his birth. And he was brought up by a stepmother. And the stepmother has served him so much that when his stepmother came and asked to be initiated as a sannyasin, he could not refuse. Just out of courtesy, she was the most valuable woman in his life. Without her, he would not have been alive at all. He could not say no to her. And because he said yes to her, then the doors were opened. Then other women came, and then he could not say to anybody else. But one thing he said, that my religion was going to last for 5,000 years. Now it will last only for 500 years. Because these women are going to disturb the whole thing. I am not that much afraid. In fact, my first disciples, first people I initiated were women. Just to put accounts right, Buddha was too adamant, and it does not look good. But Tosin, there is a truth in it. Murphy's maxim. You can fool all of the people some of the time, and some of the people all of the time, but you can't fool your own woman. That is impossible. She is bound to find. Nobody can befool a woman for the simple reason that she does not function through logic. She functions through love, through the heart. Her process is illogical. She simply jumps to the conclusions. She cannot argue, but she immediately arrives at the conclusions. Her process is like a quantum leap. She immediately understands. She can see through and through. The more you try to hide from her, the simpler it is for her to find it out. Women are powerful people, not in the muscular sense, but as far as their resistance is concerned, as far as their life energy is concerned, as far as their tolerance is concerned. And I am bound to be a little afraid because my whole work depends on them. This is for the first time a commune is being run by women. For the first time in the whole history of man, I have given more power to women, knowingly. Because my understanding is that their functioning is graceful, insightful, loving, compassionate. It is not rude. And when I have made them the pillars of my temple, certainly I cannot speak against them. So whatsoever I say about women, listen very cautiously. They are in many ways more powerful than men. The modern research says sexually they are more powerful. And if sexually they are more powerful, then as a corollary, remember, spiritually they are bound to be more powerful. Because it is sex energy that becomes transformed into spiritual energy. Just the other day I was telling to you, men's orgasm is local. Woman's orgasm is total. Her whole body is involved in it. Each fiber of her being pulsates with joy. And man became so much afraid of her joy that he has repressed for centuries the orgasmic qualities of women. And I can understand why he became so afraid. Because when the woman really goes into orgasm, she will scream. She will shout. She will go in a kind of latihan. She will start saying, sounds, words, meaningless, gibberish. What Christian mystics call glossolalia. There is a certain Christian sect which goes into an orgasmic state. It is a kind of meditation, deep meditation. I have used on many of my sannyasins glossolalia. I had to stop it because 3,000 persons going into glossolalia will disturb the whole Pune. And neighbors started reporting to the police. But in old camps I used the method very much. It is tremendously powerful. You simply become relaxed in a state of let go. You start swaying, moving, and then you allow whatsoever comes to your mind. You start saying it. Meaningless words or sounds or anything. And soon you are possessed by it. Christian mystics say it is God speaking through you. It's exactly so. Sufis call it gibberish. Gibberish comes from the name of a Sufi mystic, Jabbar. Jabbar used it for the first time in Sufi tradition. Just as I go on speaking every day, he also used to speak, but in gibberish. Sometimes I think, that when you are tired of words, because I am never going to be tired. When you say, Bhagwan, enough is enough, then I will start gibberish. Then I will simply sit here and say anything. You can make any sense out of it. It will be Greek, Latin, Arabic, Chinese, Sanskrit, any language you want to make out of it. It will depend on you, the meaning you have to give to it. Jabbar helped many people because he will go in such orgasmic joy when he will say these things that his disciples will start also. And then there will be chaos. It is because of his name in the world, gibberish, you still remember Jabbar, not knowingly. The English word gibberish has come from Jabbar. If a woman really goes into orgasmic joy, she will start saying things which will not be meaningful. Sheer joy. Utterances of joy. Like Alleluia. It does not mean anything. Meaning is left far behind. It has tremendous intensity and passion in it. Man became afraid, because the whole neighborhood will know that you are making love to your woman. And police will come and dogs will start barking and all kinds of things will happen. And people used to live in joint families. In one house there will be 100 or more people. And one woman going into orgasmic joy will create such chaos and more difficulties were ahead. When a woman goes into orgasmic joy, she has the capacity of multiple orgasms, which man is incapable to fulfill. Man can have only one orgasm, and the woman can have multiple orgasms, 12, 15, 20. Then how the man is going to satisfy her? Either he will feel defeated, ashamed, poor, humiliated, or he will have to call his friends and that too was against his ego. Sheila and George were spending the first night of their honeymoon in a quaint medieval town in France. Sheila suggested coyly that they make love every time the old watchman rang his hourly bell. George smiled in delight at this prospect, but four rings later he pretended he had to go out for cigarettes and staggered off to the watchman's tower. "Listen, old man," he wheezed, "do me a favor and for the rest of the night ring that bell at 2 hour intervals instead of hourly. Here, I will give you some money." "I would be happy to oblige," said the watchman, "but I cannot. A beautiful young lady has already bribed me to ring the bell every half hour." It is because of that fear man repressed women's all orgasmic capacities. Millions of women have lived and died without knowing that they have the capacity to experience orgasm. And without knowing that you can have great orgasmic explosions, you will not be able to understand anything of spirituality. It will be almost impossible for you. The woman is more powerful sexually. It is because of her more power that she has been repressed. It is out of fear that man has repressed her. You are right, Tosin. I am a little afraid. Knowing perfectly well that I am doing something which has never been done before, I have to move very cautiously. It is a new experiment. But great possibilities will be released out of this experiment. If this experiment succeeds on a small scale, it can succeed on a bigger scale too. My own vision is that the coming age will be the age of the woman. Man has tried for 5,000 years and has failed. Now a chance has to be given to the woman. Now she should be given the reins of all the powers she should be given an opportunity to bring her feminine energies into function, into work. Man has utterly failed. In 3,000 years, 5,000 wars. This is man's record. Man has simply butchered, killed, murdered. He has lived as if only for war. There are few days in between two wars we call days of peace. They are not days of peace. Those are only days for preparing for the new war. They are preparations for the new war. Yes, few years are needed to prepare. And again the war. Again we go killing each other. It is enough. Man has been given enough chance. Now, feminine energies have to be released. My commune is going to be rooted in feminine energy, in the energies of the mother. To me, God is more a she than a he. And she is better also because it includes he. He is poorer. It can't include she. The eighth question. Bhagwan, why are you so much against cleverness? Does it not pay in life to be clever? Ageha, cleverness is only a beautiful name for cunningness. Hence I am against it. I am not against being intelligent. But an intelligent person need not be clever. It is only the unintelligent who has to be clever. Because he is missing intelligence, he has to replace it by something else. Cleverness is plastic intelligence, cultivated intelligence. It is a poor substitute. And I know in life, at least in the short range, it pays, but never in the long range. And the wise person has to think of the long range. You can be cunning, and for the moment it may be paying, but sooner or later you will have to pay for it. You are sowing seeds which are wrong, and you will have to crop the reap. Or is it reap the crop? You can't avoid the consequences. The consequences are bound to come. Homer and his pretty wife were about to check out of the hotel when Homer expostulated over the amount of the bill. The hotel manager told him that was the normal rate for a double room with bath and TV. Homer said they did not use the TV. I am sorry, sir, said the manager.
It was there for you to use if you had wanted it. Okay, said Homer, but in that case I am going to charge you for making love to my beautiful wife. The manager denied it, and Homer said, that's okay. She was there for you to use if you wanted to. The manager was so flustered, he reduced Homer's bill, and Homer decided to try it again the next time they went on a trip. Sir, that is our normal rate, said the young clerk, but we did not use the TV. I am sorry, but it was there for you to use if you wanted to. In that case, I will have to charge you for making love to my beautiful wife. To Homer's chagrin, the young man stammered, okay, okay, I will pay you. But keep your voice down, will you? I am new at this hotel, and you are apt to get me fired. Cunningness may be paying in the short range, but sooner or later you will be caught in your own net. You will fall in the ditch you have dug for others. Beware of it. I am not against being intelligent. I am all for being intelligent. But intelligence is a totally different quality. Intelligence is of the heart, and cleverness is of the mind. Cleverness is a heady thing. Even a computer can be clever, but not intelligent. Be intelligent, but to be intelligent needs great changes in your life patterns. Intelligence is a byproduct of meditativeness. If you become silent, if you become innocent, then you will be intelligent. Intelligence means responding to the situation immediately without any preparation, without the past, without any rehearsal, just responding as a mirror reflects immediately whatsoever confronts it. When you start reflecting whatsoever life brings in front of you, and you act out of the moment, you are intelligent. But if you are clever and cunning, you are using your past experiences, and you are responding according to your past experiences. That is not response, that is reaction. And that can be done by a computer. You are not really man when you are bringing your past into the present and acting out of it. Be wise, be meditative, be intelligent. Avoid being cunning. That is ugly. That is unspiritual. And that reduces you into a machine. And you are not a machine. You are a man. Whatever can be done by the machine is not worth doing. Do that which only a man can do. Then your glory is great, and then you will release great splendor in your life. Enough for today.